With 1 week until election and referendum day, we continue our election coverage here at the Commentary by checking in with veteran journalist and broadcaster John Pfeiffer. You can read his Johnny on the Spot column regularly in the daily commuter paper Metro. Please welcome to the commentary.ca John Pfeiffer. Good morning, Mr. Pfeiffer.
Good to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. How long have you been with Metro?
Metro approached me just before the election writ was dropped, so I got involved with them, but they know that I've 35 years experience, including 7.5 years in the legislative press gallery in Victoria, where I was freelance to the world,
right,
doing radio and TV and print.
And where else can people read you? Or
my column's on the web at primetimecrime.com, and it also runs and has for a number of years now in the Abbotsford News and Upcountry in Kamloops and the Caribou Press.
The question that people, the last campaign that I watched with much interest was the American presidential election, and during that campaign there was a lot of talk of that election being the most important in our lives, so to speak. Does this have the same resonance in British Columbia, this provincial election campaign?
Well, in British Columbia, you have to, up until this week, you had to wonder if it was all on life support. That was how boring and tedious it was. As to being the most important of our lives, every election, you know, has that stamp or claims to have that stamp. But it's, I think the key element throughout what we've seen in the first 3 and a bit weeks, with just a week to go until the voting day on the 17th of May, the thing that stands out the most from my perspective is negative versus positive. The NDP have been negative and dumping on Campbell and using his name as a four-letter word every opportunity. The Liberals appeared to take the high road, but they were just being smug, I think. And now, in the final week, they realized that they may well score some points by going negative, reminding people of what we had for 10 years with NDP administrations. So it's certainly not the most important in BC's history, but when you look ahead, when you look ahead to the fact that the next election will be the year before, less than a year before the 2010 Winter Olympics, that is when things get interesting in my perspective. If an NDP government were to somehow be formed, I don't think that's likely given the way this is going, but if they squeaked through as they did in 96 with fewer number of votes but still formed government, the wind could well go out of the sails of the booming economic situation. May not, but that's the fear that the Liberals are working on and reminding people now that it's the same old gang.
This negativity that the Campbell Liberals are doing now, I guess, for lack of a better word, is that because of the a so-called poor performance in the debate?
I think that has a certainly it was a factor, but I think all along it was intended to come in late with a strong reminder of the demon Glenn Clark, for example. I think that was the plan all along. On the West Coast, we are notorious in British Columbia, and especially in the Lower Mainland, for being late bookers. There are events that come, and 8-9 days before the event, there's only a third of the tickets sold, and the organizers are wondering whether to cancel and tearing their hair out, and then bam, the next few days, it's suddenly a sellout. And it's that short attention span, the fact that the weather can sometimes divert people, all manner of things. I think it was a strategy from the get-go, from the Liberals, to come in all guns blazing in this last week.
How has Carol James done to get away from that specter of the 1990s and the NDP?
Well, she talks a good talk, but the doubt is being raised about whether she can walk the walk, especially with the union influence and the fact that much as she can talk about everything is clear and she wants a balanced government and she wants to balance between labor and business, we never hear anything from her about business. Yes, she spoke to the Board of Trade and she spoke to a couple of business groups in the course of the last 6 months or so, but nothing in their platform suggests that business is important to them, whereas when when you look at their candidates, I think 19 or 20 of the 79 candidates are directly involved in union operations. Another dozen or so were involved with the disgraced Clark government. And the Liberals may have a point when they say it's the same old, but just wearing a different skirt.
How did she do in the debate, did you think? Did you think she won it?
The TV debate, she handled herself quite well. The dyed-in-the-wool Liberals saw it as being a bit of a shrew-like harridan, hectoring and lecturing Campbell. And even some in the middle felt that she was interrupting to a degree that just wasn't fair. But on the whole, this gave her supporters the belief that, oh, she can hold her own and she's feisty. And so it was an interesting saw-off in that respect. The one thing about the TV debate was Mr. Campbell on the defensive from the get-go, saying afterwards that he was wanting to be civil and a gentleman, and there again bent over too far backwards, quite frankly, not to be engaged. He was not on his form that day, and it certainly showed. Whereas the radio appearance of the three leaders, I won't call it a debate because it certainly wasn't that, but the radio appearance of the three of them, Adrian Carr, Carol James, and Gordon Campbell, saw Mr. Campbell holding his own much more firmly, and the prime reason for that, quite frankly, is there wasn't a camera in his face. There wasn't hectoring and interrupting coming from Ms. James, and Gordon Campbell is a policy wonk, and all the questions related to different aspects of policy, there was little in politics and a lot on plans and policy and you know, situations that they would take, and that's where Mr. Campbell knows every detail. He micromanages to the point that I'm sure he ticks off some of his own cabinet ministers. So he regained some ground, certainly in the radio debate. And in both instances, both on TV and in radio, when the leaders were there, I thought Adrian Carr acquitted herself quite well.
We'll talk about Adrian Carr in just a sec, but Carol James, do you think she's got the makings of a good politician?
I think that in opposition, as an opposition leader, she will earn her spurs and may well get consideration in the next election for premier, yes. But what I believe, and you heard it here first, as they say, Joseph.
Right.
what I believe we are going to see a most interesting, never before in Canada situation come the election of 2009 is the highly likely situation that when you watch the TV debate in 2009, it'll be three women.
Really? Oh, Carol Taylor.
Well, Carol Taylor or Christy Clark, I expect to be the next premier of the province when Campbell throws in the towel between now and 2009.
Do you think that if I talked to Rafe Mayer a week and a half ago, and he was saying that, you know, it's too close to call still at that point. Do you think it's still too close to call, or is it a foregone conclusion that Campbell will win and with a healthy majority?
Well, I don't know about healthy. I do believe that all signs indicate, and especially now with the reinvigoration of the Liberals on slam ads, if you will, reminding people of what we had, especially reminding them that Mike Harcourt in 91 preached no new taxes, no, we won't do taxing, no, that's a terrible thing to think about, taxes. And then taxes were increased by $2 billion. That is the strongest point for the Liberals and the Achilles heel for the NDP. So I think the end result, the way it's stacking up, the NDP will get 25 to 30 seats out of 79, which will be a very strong and a healthy opposition for them.
So it's seen that Campbell will win at least 50 seats, right, or 50 or more?
No. If the NDP get 30, that gives Campbell 47, something like that, and I expect the Greens to win Adrian Carr's seat. on the Sunshine Coast, and maybe one other. So 47-30 is, I think, reasonable.
If he gets close to 40, 39-40, yep. Does that mean that he's out?
If it's a very squeak-by victory and the Liberals just manage to hold on to enough to form government, I think his time in office will be shorter than he may be planning. You got to remember, it's 12 years now since Gordon Campbell became the leader of the Liberals, wresting it away from Gordon Wilson. And the game plan was to be premier in 96, and a 10-year run, like Bill Bennett said and proved, is pretty well it, but they didn't get in till 2001. So I think Mr. Campbell will serve for much of the next 4 years, but I honestly, in my gut, think that he's about done with it.
Now, you talked about him being sort of a better administrator than he is a politician. You talked about this in your column on Monday.
Yes.
His personality, the lack thereof.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing. I had a piece in Metro the other day in which I talked to my old friends and colleagues, Keith Baldry from Global BCTV, Vaughn Palmer from the Vancouver Sun, and Michael Smith from the province, all the sort of leading pundits on politics in the province. And it was about why Campbell always lags behind the party in popular support. He's never been over the 50% approval rating, even in the 4 years as premier. And they all say that it comes down to the fact that, as his wife Nancy said many years ago, he doesn't like politics. He likes government. And he just is uncomfortable deer in the headlights when it's a large group. I mean, even giving speeches sometimes at his own partisan rallies, he comes across as wooden and uncharming, if I can use that. But one-on-one, he is witty, urbane, and wins over people one at a time. But you can't do that. You can't reach them all. So it's not a surprise to me to see him lag behind. His personality in front of a crowd and in front of a TV camera is not warm, that's for sure. And all three of those political observers just said that television is not kind to the man, and that's absolutely true.
How do you think it is, though, that he's been able to be so successful, that he has,
Because behind caucus doors and in cabinet meetings, he's like Bill Bennett. There comes a time when the leader has to lead. And both W.A.C. Bennett and Bill Bennett were known to take a consensus of what the cabinet thought of a particular policy or plan, for example. And it could be 75% overwhelmingly in favor of taking a certain line, but either he or his father would stand up and say, okay, well, we're not going to do that. We're going to do this. And that's where the leadership came in, because they usually were proved right as it being the wisest course. Campbell, behind the scenes in caucus, again, being a policy wonk, micromanaging different ministries, holds the respect of his own people.
But at the end of the day, it's the citizens who vote for him, and he's been campaigning in this so-called bubble, yet he isn't warm in public, yet they still vote for him. Why do you think that is?
Well, because they don't directly vote for him, and in their minds, every riding they look at, most people look at the players in their riding. They acknowledge that if they vote Liberal, it means that Campbell will stay as premier, and it's something that they can live with, even though it wouldn't be their first choice. So when you look at the poll breakdown right now of who would make the best premier, he's naturally 15 points or so ahead of Carol James, because she's untried, untrue, untested, and has been a school trustee, and that's about it.
Right.
In fact, I found it kind of surreal in the television debate to see Carol James, of 17 months as leader of the Liberals, lecturing Gordon Campbell, 12 years in the chair of the Liberals, lecturing him on leadership. It just seemed a bit off the wall.
Adrian Carr, what's your assessment of her as leader of the Greens, as leader of the so-called...
Well, earnest is the first word that springs to mind. You know, she's sincere and she's earnest. And let's not forget, the NDP turned away from any alliance or any arrangement with the Greens when the Greens offered before the 2001 election. And the NDP, in their arrogance, and I think after the election as well, said no, they aren't interested. Now I think it's going to bite them in the butt, because I believe that Carr and the Greens in different ridings, certainly in a half dozen key ridings, and maybe more, could affect the outcome vis-a-vis taking away votes from the NDP. Don't forget, in the 2001 election, there were no less than 12 seats in which the Greens came second.
Right. And in Vancouver as well, right?
Yes. And Carr's handled herself quite well. I mean, she's been there through 2001. You know, she's 53 and looks 40 years old. So she's got some mileage and an understanding of the process. And I think it would be a boon to British Columbia politics to have her and a Green representation in the House.
Now let's talk about the referendum. How does that campaign look to you a week before the vote?
Well, weak is the operative word. I'd spell it with an A, probably, because it is the, you know, the Citizens Assembly is now coming out with letters and ads and public appearances saying, we did all this wonderful work, and this is the best thing that we came up with, and it's a good thing, and you don't have to know how it works. You don't even have to know why it works. Just trust us. Well, most of the general public aren't that stupid. And I mean by that, I mean that stupid to vote for something they can't understand or haven't had it well explained to them. And the fact that this is a remote system that's only in operation in, what, Ireland and Malta, I think, when there are so much better proportional representation kind of processes, it doesn't augur well, especially as it has to clear, I think, 60% in certain calculations of the votes. 60% of the ridings have to be over 50%. I even that is brain-numbing. But STV itself, I swear, it's convoluted. Everyone who tries to simplify it ends up getting tied up in this scenario and that scenario. Electoral reform may be wise, but let's look at something that's far easier to comprehend and far more effective. It's interesting to see politics making such strange bedfellows when you see those in support of and those opposed, and it's a mix across the board of right-wing, left-wing, business, labor. They're all over the map.
On both sides, right?
Yeah, which just, I think, purports to the confusion.
You talked about it not being a simple proposition. Don't you think you'd have to give credit to the Citizens Assembly that 160 so-called regular people came up with this?
Well, your key reference there is so-called regular. I don't think it is at all representative of Joe and Jane, average British Columbian, on that Citizens Assembly. I think it was a wise idea on paper, again from the policy wonk premier who wanted to see this as democracy in action. The Citizens Assembly, they were earnest, and they did do their due diligence in many respects, but there were other ones within them who led the others by the nose because they didn't know their ass from third base. So, yes, Citizens Assembly, interesting idea, but gosh, it's like turning a super tanker. It's unmanageable, horrible. What was it, 160 some people? I mean, imagine a strata council with six people having all manner of bitter dispute and confusion and conflict. You get 160 some, and I just don't see this workable.
Do you think it'll fail?
I don't think STV will pass again, simply because people will simply either not vote or they will not vote for something they don't understand.
John, thanks so much for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure.
And I appreciate it, and I'm sure that people who were fans of your old 1040 show will appreciate listening to you again.
Well, it's appreciated, and you know, Pfeiffer is a survivor, I think, is going to be my bumper sticker.
It's probably right.
Thanks, Joseph.
We're talking with the journalist John Pfeiffer.